Hello and welcome to Pancreas Pals. I'm Emily.
And I'm Christy. We're just two gals in our 20s trying to live our best type 1 diabetic lives.
Every week we tackle a new topic from the diabetic perspective. Although we offer tips, we are not medical professionals, but we also offer plenty of anecdotes and general thoughts about how to embrace the type 1 lifestyle on your own terms.
It's not always easy to do through all of the literal highs and lows, but it does help to have a Pancreas Pal to turn to.
Hey guys, welcome to Pancreas Pals. Emily here.
And Crystal.
And today we have a special guest. Walt Drennan is joining us from Pennsylvania. So we are all across the Eastern Seaboard, and I realized that, so I thought I'd mention that, and now I realize it's stupid. Welcome, Walt.
Oh, hi.
Yay, we're so excited to have you, and let's just jump right in. You have done amazing things with Bike Beyond and all things biking and type 1. So if you'd like to just start us off, go for it, man.
Yeah, so I guess I kind of got into biking about 6 years ago now, in 2012, when I decided to actually pick it up after not doing it for years and bike across the country. I was finishing grad school, and I wanted to do something cool and fun before I had to grow up, so I found this group, this organization that I'd heard about a couple of years ago, or before. And basically they organize cross-country cycling trips for young adults to raise money for affordable housing. And then along the way, you build homes as you make your way across west. So that time I rode from Charleston, South Carolina to Santa Cruz, California, and to build homes along the way. I was on a team of 31 people, but I was the only type 1 on the team. So that was really the first time after having type 1 for 12 years at that point. That I really kind of took my type 1 into account, and not only how it like affects me, but affects people around me. And I think it was after that trip, I really kind of got to understand it a lot better, and I got to accept it in a way that I hadn't before. And I had a great time, and no complications due to type 1.
That's amazing.
Throughout that whole summer.
That's insane. So how did you... Okay, let me back up a little bit. So when were you diagnosed? What was your diagnosis story, if you will? Because that'll give us a little bit of insight before I ask you my next question.
So I was diagnosed when I was 12, back in the year 2000. It was in the middle of the summer in June. So my dad actually works for the government. So since I was five, we'd actually been moving around internationally. I grew up mostly in Central America, but at the time we happened to be in Pittsburgh. That's where my dad's family is from. We were here for the summer before we had to move to Mexico City. And in that kind of 2 month period that we were here, I happened to be diagnosed with type 1. And then, so my diagnosis was pretty kind of, I don't really remember a whole lot of it. It was mostly, I was 12. So the doctors that I was in contact with were mostly talking to my parents and not really to me.
Right.
And in addition to that, it was just kind of something that got lumped into the whole moving to a different country thing. I'd moved to around before that, so it was very kind of typical, but also easy to kind of just lump in with the whole move. So it wasn't really life-changing. It was just a new part of this new life that I had to kind of make for myself in Mexico City. With that in mind, I kind of just kept it to myself. I didn't want that to be my defining characteristic in this new school with these new people that I needed to make friends with. So I just kept it to myself for the most part. And then it kind of went along like that.
That's very interesting. I guess I never think about it in terms of like compartmentalizing it as a new chapter. Anyways, if you're moving, it's kind of just a whole new, it's like a new city, new you type of thing.
I kind of did the same thing when I went to college, because I was diagnosed right before my senior year of high school. So, you know, it's interesting to introduce yourself as a type 1 when the only people that have previously known you have seen you through the diagnosis. I don't know. I can connect.
Yeah, I was diagnosed... I mean, for those who, I'm sure, go back, listen to season 1, episode 1, listen to our diagnosis stories, Christy and I have told our tale. It's basically a tale as old as time now. But yeah, we have very different, I mean, I was halfway through college when I was diagnosed. So weird times, but moving to a different country and being diagnosed where the language is not the same, how was that?
Well, it was, before that we were actually living in Guatemala.
Then
on the Texas border. So again, it wasn't very, these were all kind of very similar things. They were just different. Like I said, I'd been moving since I was five every few years. To Guatemala first and then to the Mexico-Texas border where we lived in Mexico and I went to school in Texas.
That's interesting.
So again, it was pretty, it was, Mexico City was just a different city. It was very much within like the kind of the cultural scheme that I was familiar with.
Cool.
But it was just a different kind of type of people and different type of school. And again, type one, my parents took on most of that. My mom, I would say. I just kind of had to do what they told me to.
Moms are the best.
I didn't really pay too much attention to it or didn't really even have to. I think my honeymoon phase lasted for a really long time. So it wasn't, I don't really remember too many complications. Those really kind of took effect when I got to college.
Yeah.
About like 5 years later. And it wasn't even right at college. It was in the middle, my sophomore or my junior and senior years where I started having some issues. But yeah, so moving to Mexico City was just, again, it was just part of the whole kind of new life that I had to, new life that I had to kind of cultivate for myself. And type one was just kind of part of it. It wasn't the main part. It was just an aspect.
Cool. So when you did this biking across the country, what kind of relationship did you have with your diabetes at the time? Was it something that you were really hands-on about? Was it something that you'd been, you know, since you had had it for quite a few years at that point, you know, like what was your mindset going into it?
So going into it, I'd kept that same mindset. I kept it to myself. I didn't really talk to anybody about it for those 12 years. In college, I had friends that didn't know I had it for all those 4 years until I started passing out in front of them.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Then yeah,
that's a wake up.
Junior, senior year, I got put in the ambulances a lot, four or five times I think, just in those 2 years, and that was really the only way that people found out about it. And even then, I wouldn't discuss it afterwards.
Passing out from highs or passing out from lows?
Lows.
Oh God.
Oh goodness,
that's terrifying. So if you didn't tell anyone, did anyone glucagon you or anything like that?
No, they would have to call the paramedics, and they figured it out eventually.
Well, that's pretty that's a scary situation there, Walt. So how do you handle that now? Is it something that you're more comfortable sharing? Obviously, if it's something that you discuss with people about, but was that a turning point for you and kind of urged you forward to this biking situation?
So the bike ride was actually, it kind of forced me into it, I think. Just because it was obviously something very intense and extreme, having to bike for 8 to 10 hours a day, 75-mile days on average.
Wow.
It wasn't even that I was thinking about myself. It was more about the team. Like, I didn't want to ruin their experience. So that first bike ride, I kind of made the decision I would tell the team, like, right at the beginning before the ride started. We had an orientation, kind of 4-day orientation, and I just told them. I was very upfront about it. But I think I made a bigger deal than I needed to about it, because it ended up being something that I thought defined me, and I was very resistant to that. So it kind of, I think it made me through. So for that first half of the summer, I was kind of trying to fight it. So trying to ignore lows or trying to not hold people back. Cause the way our ride was organized, you could ride with anybody or you could ride by yourself. We didn't all ride, 30 of us together. We would split up. So just because it's safer and easier. But a lot of times I would hang out in the back, and I would, the lows, it was harder for me to notice them because CGMs weren't as big back then.
What year was this?
I was very resistant or reluctant to tell people to stop or ask them to stop. So I would often get left behind. So it made things a lot harder for myself than I needed to.
Yeah.
I figured out that trying to resist it was the wrong way to go. So just trying to accept it and realize that there's things that you can do to avoid those situations. So like stopping when you needed to or stopping before you had to, and kind of going about it that way. So it made me realize that it's a part of me, but it's not the whole me. So realizing that and trying to fight it, I was defining myself by it more so than I was willing to.
Right. What year was this?
The first bike ride was in 2012.
In 2012. Okay, interesting. And were you on an insulin pump or?
I was on the Omnipod. I had actually changed to that a few years before because, again, it was easier to hide. All the major type 1 decisions I made in those 12 years before biking were to hide it as much as possible. So I went on pens because they were easier to hide than syringes. I went on the Omnipod, was what I picked, was easier to hide than pens. So it was a very big, elaborate scheme to keep that side of my life or part of my life as hidden away as possible.
There's definitely a lot.
Bike ride, and yeah. Then I realized that that wasn't the best way to go.
I mean, it's definitely safer to discuss, but it's always, you know, no one wants to stick out and stand out in times when, especially when you're growing up, but like, you know, puberty, high school, no one really wants to stand out at that time to that for those reasons. So definitely feel you there. Even though I was diagnosed in college, I have, you know, kept it earlier on, kept the disease from a few people, but now I'm such an open book. I've accepted it. Christy and I chat about it all the time. That's why we really feel like pals are great, because if you are scared to talk to someone about it, or, you know, anxious or just overall, you know, uncomfortable discussing diabetes, it's great to have a fellow diabetic pal to turn to because they get it.
I think also once you accept it and once you start talking about it a little bit more openly, I know my fear was if I told friends at college and I told people that I was doing any kind of activity with, including, you know, family and close friends, I think the concern is once you open the door and people start having questions, like, are we ever going to get off this subject? You know, once I introduce some of this, like, are you going to question me at every meal? Like, that was always something that kind of went around my head. And I'm sure, you know, getting ready to go on a long-term, like, the cross-country bike ride with someone, you know, you don't want to open the door and make it seem like you're down to talk about this all the time and then, like, just be stuck with that as the conversation forever. PSA, that is almost never the case. People will ask their questions, you'll answer them, and then you kind of move on and you can make it a little bit more on your own terms. I have found, you know, if you have something more to add or tell someone, or you need to alert someone that you're low, it's not always about that. You know, the conversation will go on eventually, but that's definitely something that took me a little while to realize.
Education is power, people. Okay, so let's jump to how you started Bike Beyond.
So after that first ride, I realized that, like, I had this great experience. Despite all those issues that I had, I still had a really great time. I made really great friends through the ride because the team was actually put randomly. We didn't know each other before it. So I thought it would be a really cool idea to get a whole team of type 1 to do something similar and raise money for type 1 diabetes or awareness, and just kind of showing the world and themselves, like, this is something that you can live with and actually do really cool things with. So that was, like, my idea. I started, like, asking around for help because I knew I wouldn't be able to do something like that on my own. I got a lot of no's. I got a lot of kind of interested parties, but not interested in actually helping, just, like, interested in the idea itself. So I put it on the back burner for a few years and just kind of planned it and finessed and refined it. And I ended up getting a job and finding a different organization to do another bike ride with that I signed up for and did, and was able to do better because of what my experience is on the first ride. So I was able to correct things. I was able to find a way to ride those, like, extended miles every day in a way that worked with my type 1 instead of against it. And so I had, like, all these great notes for having a ride catered to type 1s and how best to do it. And then in 2016, in early spring, I did, like, a random Google or Facebook search for, like, type 1 groups because I had this renewed fire to get this trip started, and I found Beyond Type 1 and I saw their mission. They sounded like the kind of group that I was looking for, like a group that advocates for type 1 but doesn't focus on it necessarily. It talks about the people more so than the condition,
right?
And I just kind of gave them my idea, told them that I'd done it twice already, and I thought it'd be a really cool idea to get a team of type ones to do it too. And they got back to me like a couple days later and they said, yeah, let's talk about it some more. And so eventually that turned into about a year and a half of planning that turned into Bike Beyond.
That's amazing. Okay, so when, for those who aren't as familiar with Bike Beyond, I mean, it's an amazing thing. And we had Elliot Gatt, who did it last year. We had him on the show. And that was, when did we have him on? SOS. I just pulled it up. Okay, that was season 1, episode 12. We love Elliot. He came to us live from a church halfway through.
It was that long ago?
It was that long ago.
Right, somehow.
It was that long. It was in June of 2017, so we should get him back and talk about his ride and how he felt post-ride. But he came to us live from a church where his team was crashing in between rides, and he was telling us all about the highs and lows and how much of a bonding experience it was. And it's just so amazing to hear him now, you know, like talk about it. And now we get to talk to you and you're, you know, the brain behind it. So congrats on creating such an amazing thing and raising so much money. If you'd like to share how much you raised from that ride last year.
Yeah. So Beyond Type 1 was really great at kind of collecting sponsorships for us to make the ride easier and give us all the supplies that we needed.
Awesome.
An aspect of the ride was that everybody on the team had to raise at least $4,500 to be able to complete the ride, which all went to Beyond Type 1 and their kind of their advocacy, education, and resource programs. So the team itself raised over $500,000. And then in addition to all the in-kind donations, like the actual things that we got donated to us for the ride, so like camping gear, bikes, uniforms and things like that, it ended up being around $750,000.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. Incredible.
And for those of you not familiar with Beyond Type 1, I'm sure Walt would urge you to go check out their community. It's beyondtype1.org, and they do amazing things like educate people with type 1, educate those who don't have type 1, but discuss the warning signs of DKA, you know, Jerry the Bear, so many amazing things like warning about workplace discrimination, and also, you know, the amazing things people in the community are doing. And they also have really cool people repping them, like Nick Jonas. Yeah, you heard me, Nick Jonas. Anyways. So definitely go there, check it out. And Walt, we're so proud of you for, that sounds weird to tell someone you're proud of them, but anyways, we appreciate the work that you're doing for this. And can you tell us about any planning that's going on for this year's?
So this year there's not going to be another Bike Beyond, at least not in the foreseeable future, just because it was a pretty big undertaking for Type 1. It's actually just a team of 6 people.
Okay.
Before that, they were actually just used to holding events that took a month to plan and execute. This actually took almost a year and a half.
Yeah.
And that didn't even include the ride itself. That just included the planning. So now they're focusing more on Beyond Type Run. So that's their marathon running team.
That's a great name.
Yeah. So last year they had a team that participated in the New York Marathon.
Yep, we had some really cool people that have been on the show that participated in that marathon. I'll plug to that in a minute. Sorry, continue.
So this year they're doing the same thing. They have another team going to New York, but that's going to be a more regular program. So they're going to try and do that every year. They're going to try to switch up the major marathon that they do, but they're going to go to New York again this year. And if any of you are into running, I'd check that out. I believe they're still taking people for this year's team. But that's kind of the big adventure kind of activity. They're also co-sponsoring Slipstream weekends with Connected in Motion. That's a nonprofit that is based out of Toronto, Canada. They hold adventure weekends for Beyond Type 1's, the 18 and up crowd. So it's basically like camp for adult type ones. I was actually lucky to go to their Slipstream in Catalina last summer, Catalina Island, California, in Southern California. And it's probably the closest thing to Bike Beyond that I had ever done after that. So it's basically just I think that time there was about 100 type ones just kind of hanging out on Catalina Island. So we got to go paddleboarding and snorkeling.
That's so cool. Oh my God.
But also they had like information sessions. So everybody that was there was type one, but they also had like really interesting backgrounds and jobs. A lot of them were diabetes educators and people that worked at Tandem, for example. So mm-hmm. like a lot of people that had like very cool and unique experiences with type one. And then like we would share like tips and tricks like on traveling. And I learned a lot in those 3 days, like almost as much as I learned in the entire summer living with 20 type ones at the same time. But yeah, so Connected Emotion Slipstreams, there's three of them in the U.S. now. So I'd highly suggest to check those out. And Beyond Type One is helping them put those together.
Amazing. We'll definitely link to that on our website, which is pancreaspals.com.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it, Christy. Like, jump in
here? Yes.
How much juice do you keep on you for all of these various activities? Because I'm hearing about all of this awesome stuff you're partaking in, and all I'm thinking about is, like, what bag would I be taking, and how many juice boxes am I stuffing in? Or do you just constantly reload along the way, or do you head out with just, like, a massive supply of juice and low snacks?
So that's actually what I kind of learned from my first two rides. So the first ride, they only had one stop throughout the day, which was lunch in the middle of the day. And when you're talking about like 60, 70 mile days, it's a long time in between stopping periods. And so what I was doing was just kind of like trying to barrel through it and not have to eat, which obviously didn't work. The second ride that I did actually split up the days within like 20 to 30 mile chunks. So every 20 to 30 miles we would stop and have like a snack break or a water break. And again, I was the only type one on that team too. But it was just a lot more fun because you interacted with the entire team more throughout the day. And then you just had breaks, and those breaks I used for like checking my sugar, checking my pod, making sure it had everything I needed, and just making sure I was where I needed to be to keep on going those next 20 miles or so. So that's what I modeled Bike Beyond off of. So during our days, we had two vans that rode with us. We would cycle through. Everybody would drive the vans every so often. So we would cycle through. And then the people would then, there would be a water van that would kind of go ahead 20, 30 miles and stop and then have snacks for us and water. And that's where we would stop. And then we would do that all day until we got to where we were going. We'd have lunch in the middle of the day and maybe about 4 or 5 water snack stops. And then everybody was required to have a Camelback on. So they would have the, you know, water that you could carry as well as your type one supplies and food. So you never really had to carry too much, just enough to get you to the next 20 miles. And again, everybody was carrying, you know, their own stuff. So you would always have backups if anybody, and everybody's always willing to share. Everybody had type one. So even if you didn't have low snacks at that moment, I ran into that a lot. It's like, I would just like say I'm low, and then five people would hand me, like, we had Honey Stinger was a sponsor. They would give me snacks. And so it was probably the best place you could be if you were type one, because like everybody had their own stuff, which you could then use. And they were of course willing to share.
That's so awesome. Did they keep any medical professionals around, or? Just out of curiosity.
That was actually a question I got a lot, even in the planning phases. Like, do you plan on having a doctor or a nurse? And it's like, I was adamantly against it because, like, you don't have to, like, people don't have those things. Like, people that have, you know, functioning pancreases don't have those things. Why should we? And because you can't, like, regular people just can't walk around with a nurse. Like, you can't have a doctor on you 24/7. So I thought it wouldn't really show what we could do if you had that, and plus what kind of doctor or nurse would volunteer their summer just to kind of hang out. And really I don't see them doing any more than we would. Like, we were all required to have glucagon kits on us at all times, and we all knew how to mix them and like administer them. So it was, and plus everybody had type one. So we all knew exactly what to do when, and it was probably, again, it was the best place to be in a scenario like that. If you were to go dangerously low, or not have the things that you needed because somebody would have like a backup for you. So no medical professionals. We did have one rider that happened to be a nurse, but it was just coincidence. It wasn't required.
That's happy coincidence. But yeah, I do find that a lot of impassioned type ones end up either being like diabetes educators or things like that, at least in some of the cool people we've met along the way. But yeah, is there anything else you wanted to discuss, Walt? Because we're excited to have you, and this was very informative, and can't wait to hear the next adventurous thing you do.
The only thing I've got going on is, so the Bike Beyond Summer was actually made into a documentary by Neil Greathouse. He was the director and one of the cameramen. He's the Beaties on Instagram. I'm having a screening here in Pittsburgh on May 5th. If anybody wants to come out, it's going to be at the REI in the South Side. It's a free event with food and kind of drinks and low snacks if you need them. And then the movie and like a Q&A. It's the day before the Pittsburgh Marathon. So it's a cool kind of easy Saturday night before you have to run 26 miles if you're doing that.
Amazing. Is there anywhere for people to view it if they can't get to Pittsburgh? Is it online anywhere?
So there's going to be a lot. So the team itself is kind of gearing up to start screening in their local areas. So I would highly suggest keeping an eye on the Beyond Type 1 website, beyondtype1.org. And then they're also working on getting it to the major public kind of through a streaming platform of some sort. They're not sure exactly when, but I think that's kind of being scheduled for early this summer, so around June, July.
So that's in the works. Amazing. Right. So yeah, definitely. So
basically, you just keep an eye on Beyond Type 1, and they'll definitely be advertising that.
Amazing. So head on over to our website, and we'll link to all of these cool things for you. So it's just one click away. Anything you wanted to add, Christy?
No, I think just that I am absolutely amazed and
inspired.
You know, the amount of planning that I put into like my 1 hour sessions on the elliptical suddenly just does not seem all that complex anymore.
You know,
so good to always keep that in perspective.
Yeah.
And good luck, and keep us apprised, because we love being able to share anything like this. You know, I think a lesson I would have loved to have heard when I was younger is, you know, type one doesn't mean you can't do it. And I think this is just such a prime example of that. So
retweet.
Happy to share any news about it.
Yes. Okay. So thanks everyone for listening. Follow us on Instagram at @pancreas_pals, on Facebook at @pancreaspalspp. Head to our website, pancreaspals.com, to get links to all the cool things that we just talked about. And thank you so much, Walt, for taking the time on your Sunday to talk with us. And we hope everyone has an amazing week, and check back next week for a very cool, very special episode that we're very pumped about, pun intended. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.